Well, welcome, Jacob Swell. It is great to see you all here. I am Greg Meyer. We are all in a brand new state of Minnesota this Sunday. That's pretty amazing. Have you noticed the difference? No. As of, was it Wednesday? Anyone who loves another person and wants to build a life together for good and be a part of this world can recognize that relationship as a married person, whether the same gender or not. And I think that's pretty amazing. I know this discussion is complicated and it has a lot of controversy, and I know there are even people in this room that aren't maybe quite so excited about that. And I think this is a good thing for us to grapple with as a community and to continue to live forward. I think the fact that these people are looking for their relationships to be of good, and every gay couple I know that have been in a basically married relationship to this point are just, I mean, they're the people that I want to have around our lives. And I know they take nothing away from me. And I think this is a good thing to figure out how God is going to bless them and bless all of us and just help us understand that together. So that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. You might also notice something else is very different about our state, and that is the state of the seats that you are on. The custodians worked really hard to clean all that carpet where the chairs are up there. So if you're here looking for the gum you left last week, you may not be able to find it. And I apologize. This week, they're going to do this floor. So, in fact, if a few of you want to help us stay behind and kind of move everything off the floor and up onto the risers afterwards, that'd be fantastic. So that's what's going on a little bit here. So welcome to Godflix. This is our series. Every August, we take movies that they've been out long enough only that we can get them on video. And so you can see them, and so we can get clips and stuff like that. And it is one of our favorite things to do. And the only kind of condition, well, there's obviously some movies we aren't going to use, but the only real condition is we don't want to use an obviously religious movie, in most cases, because we see, like, God is everywhere, and it's really fun to look at these films and see where God shows up in places we don't expect it, because I think we do have a God that is too big to be kept down. When you start looking at anything, whether you put it under the sacred or the secular label, sooner or later we start finding God inside there speaking to us and teaching us and helping us realize some things. So that's a fun thing to do. And we've got some great stuff going on. I hope too that you got these calling cards. If you didn't get one, they might be in the baskets, but I think you just can pick them up on that blue table when you go out. Get a packet of these and hand them out. Give them to friends. Leave them at coffee shops. Any place with a bulletin board, you can do that. Some people have been creative. Little Elliot Kennedy found another use for these. Which he took a picture of and sent me. Where are you, Elliot? Oh, there. You're also handing them out, right? You didn't just leave your house there, right? Good. He's nodding his head. Very good. So you can do that as well. So we got some other movies. You got me on Life of Pi today. Next week, Nick Tassler of Decision Pulse fame. You may have heard him interviewed by Kerry Miller on public radio last Tuesday or something like that. But he is part of the Jacob Swell community, and he's going to be taking us on the unexpected adventure of The Hobbit. And then we got Melissa and Heidi teaming up on Wreck-It Ralph and Searching for Sugar Man, the documentary, but the only movie I have ever seen that got 96% on Rotten Tomatoes in Academy Awards is the last week with Annie Jolovitz. So some great stuff to be looking forward to. Go to Redbox, pick them up, watch them. They're great stuff. Let me see. So who has seen The Life of Pi or read the book? Lots of hands, which means, yeah, most of you, but not everybody, okay? So that's okay. If you have, you're an advantage, but don't worry if you haven't, because I'm going to run you through. You'll get the details. We'll get you caught up, all right? That's okay. In fact, it's just going to make you want to see the movie or read the book all the more after this, hopefully, and you might actually get a little bit more out of it. But quickly, take out your Sunday papers. You can flip them over to the back side. I'm not going to quite start with that, but there's an outline that I'll be following along there. And let me just give you a real fast rundown of the movie while the trailer runs silently in the background. So the story begins when a writer visits Pi in Canada, because when he was in India, he heard that there was a man who had a most amazing story that would make him believe in God. So he's hoping to write this story, and so he goes and visits him to hear the story. Pi begins telling his story when he was a young man growing up in India. His father ran a zoo in Pondicherry, so he grows up in a zoo. I mean, how much fun is that? That sounds pretty cool. He's also a very, very smart and reflective young man. and observing everything around him, and he grows up Hindu, but he also then becomes Christian and Muslim. Not instead, but also, which is kind of, we'll be getting into some of that. When he's a teen, probably 16, 17, something like that, his father, because of the political situation in the 70s with India, decides that it's time to emigrate to Canada. So they sell all their animals, and a bunch of the animals are sold to zoos in the U.S. and Canada. In fact, some of them were sold to the Minnesota Zoo, according to the book. All right, this is fiction, so don't go to the zoo looking for them. But it is listed in the book. And they accompany them then on the cargo ship going to the States with their family. Well, after they leave the Philippines and they're about to cross the Pacific and they get over the Mariana Trench, they hit a horrible storm and something goes wrong and we don't really know what, but the ship sinks. And I think that's ahead of me a little bit, but the ship sinks and Pi is the only survivor, okay? And he ends up in a lifeboat with Richard Parker. And Richard Parker is an adult Bengal tiger. All right. So, got that. That's kind of all normal everyday stuff. And Pi spends 227 days in that lifeboat with Richard Parker before reaching the shores of Mexico. And that's kind of, you know, what the bulk of the movie is about. And I don't think it's a spoiler to tell you that he survives, because after all, you already know that he's telling the story to a writer afterwards, right? Okay. So this is a story about courage, about determination. It's a story about discovery. It's a story about friendship. But on the deepest level, what it's really about is it's a story about believing, and it's a story about what is real and what is true, and how we relate to things as real or true. But it all starts with his name, Pi. All right? Now, probably true in lots of movies, certainly true in this movie. There are no wasted details. If there is something happening, if there's some detail in this movie, it's there for a reason. It means something. It's telling part of the story for you. And definitely Pi is one of those things. His name is actually Pisine Molitor Patel, all right? But because of its persistent and rather unfortunate mispronunciation, he decides at a very young age to shorten it to just Pi. Okay? So let's just catch a quick clip about that. Oh, there should be a video right before one before that.
Good morning. I am Pisine Molitor Patel, known to all as Pi. Good morning. I am Pisine Molitor Patel, known to all as Pi, the 16th letter of the Greek alphabet, which is also used in mathematics to represent the ratio of any circle's circumference to its diameter, an irrational number of infinite length, usually rounded to 3 digits as 3.14 Pi.
Very impressive, Pi. Now sit down. R. Velusami.
And from then on, you're a Pi?
Well, no, not quite. R.
Murugan. Nice try, PC.
But I still had the whole day ahead of me. French class was next.
Jamapel PC in Molitor Patel. Did Pi.
Then geography.
These are the first 20 decimal places of Pi.
My last class of the day was mathematics.
That's right. He's really doing this.
By the end of that day, I was Pi Patel, school legend.
Okay, Pi. Like I said, no wasted details. Pi is an irrational number. Irrational number, that means it never ends. If you try to calculate it, it just goes on and on forever, infinitely, would never in a repeating pattern. It just keeps on going. All right? Now, the long shot of that being is that you can never capture pi. No matter how you write it, whether you write it as 3.14 or 3.1416 or 3.14159 or 3.14159265 or until it fills four chalkboards, you are still wrong. You're always missing something. You don't quite have it right. In fact, the only time pi is actually correct is when you write the symbol. Because that symbol isn't the thing, but at least it represents the actual thing that you can never capture in numbers. Now, what does that have to do with the movie? What does it have to do with the story? What does it have to do with what we're talking about? What this movie is about is saying there is almost nothing in life that is exactly what you think it is. That is simple and straightforward, and you can capture it, and you can name it, and it's real the way you see it. No, you see it, but no matter what we're talking about, whether we're talking about mathematics or science, whether we're talking about stories, whether we're talking about religion, whether we're talking about psychology, we are always making assumptions. We are always making approximations. We are always saying, well, this is as close as we can go, but from here, we need to leap. And it doesn't matter what the category is, life is about that. And so the story of Pi, the life of Pi, is an adventure down the rabbit hole of having the humility to say that no matter what we have, no matter how certain we are about it, we don't quite have it. But nonetheless, what we do have, we got to go with. And we can be certain about that. We can live with it, and that can be good enough. And we can make the most of it within the humility of our admitting that that's what it's about. And Pi starts that adventure by talking and experiencing religion. Let's see this next piece.
I met Christ in the mountains when I was 12. We were visiting relatives, tea growers in Munnar. It was our third day there. Ravi and I were terribly bored.
Challenge. I give you 2 rupees. Run into that church and drink the holy water.
You must be thirsty. Here, I brought you this.
Why would a God do that? Why would he send his own son to suffer for the sins of ordinary people?
Because he loves us. God made himself approachable to us, human, so we could understand him. We can't understand God in all his perfection, but we can understand God's son and his suffering as we would a brother's.
That made no sense. Sacrificing the innocent to atone for the sins of the guilty. What kind of love is that? But this son, I couldn't get him out of my head.
If God is so perfect and we are not, why would he want to create all this? Why does he need us at all?
All you have to know is that he loves us. God so loved this world that he gave his only son.
The longer I listened to the priest, the more I came to like this son of God.
Thank you, Vishnu, for introducing me to Christ.
I came to faith through Hinduism, and I found God's love through Christ. But God wasn't finished with me yet. God works in mysterious ways. And so it was, he introduced himself again, this time by the name of Allah.
I love that. Thank you, Vishnu, for introducing me to Christ. Or I came to faith through Hinduism. I found God's love through Christ. Most people don't want one religion. Pi adds on three. I mean, you know, what's going on with all that? And not switching from one to another, but adding them on. And, you know, Islam on top of all of it. So it's kind of interesting. In fact, there's one scene. It's not in the movie, all right? So get the book and read chapter 23, even if you're not going to read the whole book. Just read chapter 23, because one of the most priceless things is when he's walking the streets with his parents at this age, and they happen to run into the priest, the imam, and his mentor from Hinduism, and all of a sudden all realize that their devout student is something they share with all three of them. It's quite an amazing conversation that happens that Pi is not really excited about having to sit through. So he has these three faiths that he's pursuing actively all at the same time, and his father, who is the rationalist, progressive, modern Hindu, Indian, is just like not really excited about, neither is his brother. So let's take a peek at that.
You need to convert to three more religions, Pisin, and you will spend your life on holiday.
Are you going to Mecca this year, Swami Jesus? Or to Rome for your coronation as Pope Pius?
You stay out of this, Ravi. Just as you like cricket, Pi has his own interests.
You cannot follow three different religions at the same time, Pisini.
Why not?
Because believing in everything at the same time is the same as not believing in anything at all. Listen, instead of leaping from one religion to the next, why not start with reason? In a few hundred years, science has taken us farther in understanding the universe than the religion has in 10,000.
Science can teach us more about what is out there, but not what is in here.
Yeah. I'd much rather have you believe in something I don't agree with than to accept everything blindly. And that begins with thinking rationally. You understand? Good.
I would like to be baptized.
Okay, so it isn't that easy to make go away, is it? Here's what's interesting is I don't think Pi really disagreed with his father about reason. You know, and just like Pi didn't see why he had to choose between Hinduism, Christianity, and Islam, he also couldn't quite see why he had to choose between Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, and reason. In fact, you could almost really make the argument that at this point, Pi is a believer in four great religions: Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, and reason. So that's where we are at that point. So what do you think? Can you believe in more than one religion? Or do you have to decide which is right and recognize the others as wrong? I mean, that's the way the cards are normally played, right? Here at Jacob's Well, one of the cards that we play out quite a lot, and I think is really important to who we are, is this whole concept of the wrong question. The idea behind a wrong question is if you're asking the wrong question, it doesn't matter how hard you work on it or how good your answer seems to be, that answer is going to be unhelpful, right? Because you're not asking the right question. And I think this is a great example of one of these wrong question places. And this is on your outlines here. So what is a wrong question? In my estimation, the wrong question is, which religion is the real one? All right? We spend a lot of time as that question. That's the obvious question. That's the easy question. That's a question we are programmed. After all, our world, taking the faith experiences of a very diverse people over thousands of years, has boiled down those experiences in some categories and said, well, one category has to prevail. And so we tend to ask the questions about religion looking at those categories. But is that the right way to do it? So rather than deal with that wrong question, which doesn't seem to give us very helpful answers, it seems to create a lot of strife and misunderstanding among each other, what's the better question? And I would say that the better question is this. The better question is, what truth is taught by any faith experience? What truth is being taught by any faith experience? Whether that's a faith experience about God, about life, about the world, and about yourself. Pi's father said, believing in everything is like believing in nothing. Is that right? These categories that we call religions, that we've divided up into, we've divided this faith experience into, and we said, well, one's got to be right and the others all have to be wrong. Those religions are our creations. And the truth is that even within those categories, within those religions, there are enormous differences. Christian denominations saying that the other ones aren't really accepted by God, or not being willing to talk or to pray with them or to cooperate with each other because they believe wrong. It's not even between religions, it's within religions. Here's my point. If one religion is right and all the others are wrong, then how come there is so much difference within our religion? Or let me say that right. How come there is as much difference within our religion as there is between our religions? Because sometimes there is. Sometimes we find our bedfellows are from other faiths. So what that tells me is that it isn't the category of the religion that makes it real or truthful, or whatever it is that you're trying to look for in your religion. All right? It isn't the category, the label that we put on it, that makes it authentic or not. The authenticity comes from the experience that is being shared. That's where God was. That's where God was intersecting with someone's life. And it's that authenticity of what is being shared, but it's also with your ability to understand and to relate to it. And that's actually really, really important, and maybe something that we forget sometimes, our ability to understand and to relate to a faith experience. We need to be able to do that. Most of us aren't sponges quite like pie. Most of us can't take three world religions and then add reason on top of it and somehow, you know, keep them in order and help them work and cooperate with each other. We need to have a cultural or a life experience connection with a faith. We need to, in essence, pick one. Or I might almost say we need to be picked by a faith. We need to be picked by one and have a path, and we need to stick with it. We need to commit to it. So pick one. But don't judge the others. That's not your job. All right? Here's how I'd put it, and this is a fill-in on your outlines. Choose your path, but keep your walls low. Do you know what I mean by that? We all need to say, this is the experience of God that I relate to, that I understand, that I'm a product of, and I am going to seek God in that path. All right? For most of us, In this country, coming from our backgrounds, it's probably around Christianity. But keep your walls low. In other words, along your path, we have walls. If the walls are high, which what a lot of the church has done, you can't see over them, and we only see our faith. And anything on the outside is wrong, it's bad, it's foreign, it's mistaken, whatever. And I think God says, no, keep your walls low. I mean, you need a channel, but you also need to be able to see the larger world where God is at work. And to realize that all of this is a dialogue, and it's continuing to happen, and it's continuing to grow. Don't wear blinders. Learn from others, those within your faith and those from beyond your own faith. In fact, from those without any faith. All right? A couple of things. Jesus in John chapter 14 says, there are many rooms in my Father's house. I wouldn't tell you this unless it was true. I'm going there to prepare a place for each of you. Now, this is often simply taken as a comfort thing. Okay, oh, God, great. Jesus knows me. Jesus is going to go to heaven, and Jesus is going to have a place in heaven for me. I don't know that that's a wrong interpretation, but I think he was also talking to his followers about what was going on in their lives right now. He was talking to everyone and says, there are a lot of rooms in my Father's house. It's a lot bigger than the room that you see that you're in. And I'm going ahead to you. I'm preparing a place for everybody, for each of you are going to have your rooms. You probably have all heard the jokes, you know, about the guy going to heaven and going by all the houses where every denomination, every kind of faith has their own room, their own house up in heaven, and none of them know that the others are there. The joke is actually funnier than that. That's just a reference to it. Okay. So another time, Jesus is speaking to a Roman centurion, not a Jew, not a believer. Okay, Jesus is speaking to this Roman centurion, and he says to him at the end of their encounter, not even in Israel, not even among the people of my own faith have I ever seen such faith. How is it that someone that isn't a follower of the Torah, that isn't a Jew, that doesn't follow all the laws and the regulations, that doesn't know who Yahweh is, could exhibit greater faith than anyone else, except that God was big enough for that? Now, I know I'm the pastor here, so it's my job to enforce Christianity, to make sure you all believe the right thing in the right way, okay? Problem is, it doesn't work that way. The problem is that Christianity that we would be talking about when we talk that way isn't the real thing. It's something we created. It's something that makes us feel comfortable. And God wants to push us beyond that. God wants to take us into a much bigger world. And God is trying to, you know, get us to do that. And so let me explain to you a little bit why I think this is authentic, why I think understanding faith this way, about choosing this path and following it with great commitment but keeping our walls low, is an authentic way to be faithful. And the first is that the God that we have is too big to not show up everywhere somehow. God is, but God created everything. The Hindus or the Buddhists or the animists someplace, they don't live in a world that was created by some other God. God created it. And God can't not show up in the nooks and crannies of everything. The other thing is that God loves us too much to not seek ways to touch everyone's life. God loves you too much to only wait for some other Christian to come to tell you about God. God is going to find a way to come into your heart before, whether you know about God, whether you know about Jesus or not. We lived for 7 years with people in Papua New Guinea who had only been, had an experience with the outside world at all for 10 to 20 some years. Certainly their ancestors had never heard of anything in the West, any world religion for that matter. But it's pretty clear that God had been at work among them all their lives. Does that mean they're perfect? No. Does that mean that their faith didn't need to be transformed? No, of course their faith needed to be transformed. Does our faith need to be transformed? Does this category we call Christian need to be reformed? Yeah, it does. God needs to continue to be working among us, transforming us, redeeming what we have. When I'm talking about this way, I'm not saying that God is nothing or God is only relative. I'm saying that God is everything. And God is bigger than we can put any of our packages. The book of Psalms, I think, gives us another hint at this. Psalm 19, verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of God's hands. You can't go anywhere without starting to see God coming out, emanating out of all the nooks and crannies of our world. But be aware, this isn't permission for you then to go make the world or make the God of your preferences, all right? And this is another thing. So be aware, this is not a pick and choose way of creating God. It isn't our job to create God, all right? It's our job to discover God. So we are not trying to give you permission to, you know, run down the buffet line, go through the smorgasbord and say, I would like a little of this on my God plate and a little of that on my God plate because that's the kind of God I would like. But what it is a way of helping you be willing to look beyond your box so that you can actually discover the God is there. The God that is trying to show you more of who God is and what God's truth in this world is all about all the time. Now, that may be a little too unstructured and unsettling for a few of you. I hope so, actually. So what I'd like you to do is find a person or two people by you. That means you can't leave anyone out, right? Go find one or two people and just talk about this simple question. Does this work for you? I mean, can you handle this idea that I've got to pick my path and keep my walls low? So do that, all right? Talk to each other, yes or no, and why. And if you would like to, in fact, I would really like you to, pull out your cell phone and my number's up there, text me a Y or an N. Like, yes, it works. No, it doesn't. And just a phrase on why. Yeah, you can also do that later if you don't have time to do it right now. Or you can write on your communication card, stick in the offering basket. I'll look at those later too. So go. Take a couple minutes. Talk to each other. I'm just going to reiterate the question one more time. If you're good, you can just keep talking over me. But the yes is that, yes, the messiness of like, there's not just one thing right and everything else is wrong is okay with me. The no is no, there's got to be a right way and I got to know it, okay? Go on. Okay. I mean, obviously, this is an all-evening conversation over some wine and something like that. But I hopefully got you started and you can keep talking. And I'm getting all kinds of really interesting comments here. I have to share this one. This is really good. This comes actually from my son, and he writes, "So what's for dinner, Papa?" You don't expect to not get called out on that, do you? Okay. So keep sending them. This is good. I'll do something on Facebook or on our website with it. And please, most of the people are saying, yes, my understanding of God and faith works this way. I think it is difficult, and I know there's not everyone is going to agree with that. So feel free to do that. Also, like I said, use your communication cards and so on to go after some of that. So pi is an irrational number, right? All right, it is never complete. It's never quite right when it's spoken, and never quite able to be captured. It can only be represented, but that doesn't mean it's not real. It's just that it can never be held in your hand. Okay, let's hold on to that idea. Now we're going to move on. This is the big part of the movie, but don't worry. The big part of my message is done. All right? We're not going to be here till 12:30. I promise. So moving on. There's a shipwreck in 227 days at sea. I think these slides will probably just start rolling there. All right? 227 days at sea. And as a teenager, Pi has lost everything. His father, his mother, his brother die. He's been uprooted from his home. He really can't go back. All he has left is in this 24-foot lifeboat with him that he has to share with a tiger. Kind of raising the question, is it better to be in a lifeboat with a tiger or not in a lifeboat at all? But actually, and this is important, although I'm not going to really get into it at this point, there's also a zebra, a hyena, and an orangutan in the lifeboat with him. You know, all these animals were running all over the boat and jumped in the water and got in his lifeboat with him. So he's in there with those four animals, and it gets really ugly. You know, one can imagine the predator-prey thing, right? And after not too long, there's only one of them left. And guess which one? The tiger, right? The tiger is left. The tiger, who is a carnivore, and as beautiful as he may be, he is neither tamed nor cute, nor cuddly. He is a carnivore, a 450-pound adult carnivore that has amazing speed and strength and is determined to not go hungry. Okay, so Pi has to escape the raft. He can't be staying on the raft with this tiger. And he creates, or on the lifeboat with the tiger, so he creates a little raft that he sits on. But all of the supplies and things that he has on the lifeboat and so on eventually are lost. They're either used up or storms and other things happen, and he ends up with just him and the raft and the tiger. And Pi learns something through this experience that would be really, really good for us to learn. And that's what I want to focus on here for a little bit. And that is, well, God's presence with him through this whole experience was very, very real. In the beauty of the world of nature around him and on some of the ways that he was provided for and things like that. At the same time, he had to gradually realize, and it took a long, long time, that this wasn't a game. This wasn't like God's big test of him. If you learn the right thing, or if you do the right thing, then all of a sudden everything is going to be all right. No, this was an honest ordeal. He was on an actual journey that didn't necessarily have any meaning to it whatsoever. There wasn't a purpose behind him being on this life raft. He was going to have to be giving up everything. So let's catch a few clips here.
My name is Pi Patel. I have been in a shipwreck. I am on a lifeboat alone with the tiger. Please send help. God, I give myself to you. I am your vessel. Whatever comes, I want to know. Show me.
everything is going to be required of him, even his hope. At this point, Pi, speaking to the writer, says, "You might think I lost all hope at this point. I did. And as a result, I perked up and felt much better." Does that make sense? That in such total resignation or surrender, you find some peace? I mean, Pi, like a person with cancer, isn't optimistic. Like someone who lost his job and knows that he or she cannot find another job in time to not have their house foreclosed upon, he does not resort any longer to any trite platitudes or anything that would simply make him feel better about things. He simply goes on. And in his acceptance of reality, he somehow is able to get beyond those mere facts of the situation and find what he needs. And that is, life goes on. So what is the meaning of this journey? Life isn't a game. It isn't a reward or a punishment. And when Pi gets behind all the games that he might be playing with God or fooling himself, and he leaves behind all of his regrets and all of his if-onlys, he gets down to what it's about in the first place. He gets on with life. That is, after all, what God has called us to. Let's catch the next clip.
I never thought a small piece of shade could bring me so much happiness. That a pile of tools, a bucket, a knife, a pencil might become my greatest treasures, or that knowing Richard Parker was here might ever bring me peace. In times like these, I remember that he has as little experience of the real world as I do. We were both raised in a zoo by the same master. Now we've been orphaned, left to face our ultimate master together. Without Richard Parker, I would have died by now. My fear of him keeps me alert. Tending to his needs gives my life purpose.
The meaning of the journey is to live in all of life's fullness. That's what it's about. Stripped down, empty of illusions, games, the real thing. That's where God is. Jesus said, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock." What's that about? Is it maybe saying that we have old built houses, we've built little worlds that we live in where we control things and we say this is how things work, and God is on the outside knocking and saying, "Do you want to come out and play? I mean, do you want to be part of the real world, or do you want to live in there? Behold, I stand at the door of knock." You know, religion is often pegged as the purveyor of make-believe worlds, of wouldn't it be nice if it was like this? And then oftentimes religion has done that. But isn't possible that when we really encounter with God, our real faith experiences are ones that say, just give up on all that stuff that you created and see this real world, because that's where I am and that's where I'm going to be living with you. It isn't about religion. God doesn't call us to religion. God calls us to true relationship, to real life in all its fullness. Okay, so I'm skipping some real significant parts of the story. There's this thing with the island, if you've seen the movie or read the book. All right, I'm going to skip it because I don't have time, because you need some prizes, and frankly, because I have no idea what it means. But after you get beyond that, Pi ends up on a beach in Mexico. He's barely alive. Richard Parker saunters off into the jungle, never looking back. It was this very unceremoniously. He's in the hospital, and a couple representatives of the Japanese shipping company come to interview him to find out why did the ship sink and so on. And so he tells them the story that the movie is all about. And they don't like it. I mean, like, in fact, they can't go back to Japan and say, this is the story of what happened. I mean, they just don't feel it's credible at all. So Pai says, would you like a different story? Would you like a story without animals but with people? A story that isn't full of things that you don't already know and already believe in? And they say, yeah, we would like that kind of a story. So he tells them that kind of a story. The animals are gone, and they're replaced with people. One of them, his mother. And all the brutality, all the horrible stuff that happened between the animals happens between people. And the one that is left is a tiger, which is Pai. So a question. Who here has read the book or seen the movie? Okay. Who believes that the story with the animals is true? Oh, by the way, you can vote more than once. If you haven't seen it, but you get just from hearing now, who believes that the story with the people is the real one? Who isn't sure? Who says it doesn't matter? That got the most votes. Okay, let's see this last clip.
Investigators didn't seem to like the story exactly. They thanked me. They wished me well, and they left.
So the story is both the zebra and the sailor broke their leg. And the hyena killed the zebra and the orangutan. So the hyena is the cook. The sailor is the zebra. Your mother is the orangutan. And you're the tiger.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
I've told you two stories about what happened out on the ocean. Neither explains what caused the sinking of the ship. And no one can prove which story is true and which is not. In both stories, the ship sinks, my family dies, and I suffer.
True.
So which story do you prefer?
The one with the tiger. That's the better story.
Thank you. And so it goes with God.
And so it goes with God. So the real question then for you folks is, what is the story of your life that you prefer? Neither of them can be proven. But in one, God is there and at work, a part of it. You're part of something much bigger. In the other, God isn't. Which one do you prefer? Well, we could say, well, which one is real? But we know that pi is an irrational number and it's never complete and never quite figured out, and you'll never be able to prove any of that. So you have to decide which one you are going to prefer. And you choose that path, and you commit to it. You keep your walls low and you see what is around you. You continue to learn. You continue to use the eyes of faith and the eyes of reason to question and to make your path a better and better path. And you share it with other people because they need to not be judged by your path, but to learn what you have learned. Keep your eyes, your ears, and your heart open. The life of Pi doesn't have a lot of answers. In fact, it doesn't have any, but it does ask some really good questions that are good ones for us to be living with. And that tiger is one that I hope we never stop wrestling with. Would you pray with me? God, could you just give us a package? I mean, we really just want to go to the freezer, pull out the meal, open up the box, stick in the microwave, and know it's going to be done in 8 minutes. But no, you say you like us to do stuff from scratch. That's better eating. It's also a better way of living. It's better faith. Thank you for giving us other people to figure this out with, to walk along with, to learn from, to teach, to share, to give forgiveness and acceptance and hope and peace with. It's a long journey. That 227 days just represents the lifetimes that we have to be in that lifeboat. So be with us and help us to continue to prefer the story that you have written. In your name we pray. Amen.